Well, last week we began to see how some of these untruths and kind of falsehoods that were being taught young people, how they were being manifested really in some of the university protests and disinvites and things of that nature. And we talked about especially UC Berkeley, which was one of the first ones in recent years that kind of reinstituted this. And John shared with me a little article that I thought was good, John Gambold. And it was an article about what Ronald Reagan did back in the late 60s when they tried this mess with him. I'm just going to share a few things with you. This was back when, of course, this time, you know, of course, they're over there. They were told to stand down. We talked about that. They said, police, you stand down. Don't do anything. Even one of the police unions said, this is the recent one in 2017, when these rioters saw that there was no action taken against them, it emboldened them into acting more aggressively. So no leadership, they just kept doing what they wanted. Well, Ronald Reagan, back in the 60s, you know, there was all this violence and protesting with the Vietnam War and other things of that nature. When he was running for office for the governor of California, here's what he said. He said, do we no longer think it necessary to teach self-respect, self-discipline, and respect for law and order? Will we allow a great university to be brought to its knees by a noisy dissident minority? Will we meet their neurotic vulgarities with vacillation and weakness? Or will we tell those entrusted with administering the university we expect them to enforce a code based on decency, common sense, and dedication to the high and noble purpose of the university? That's Reagan. That's the platform he ran on. In other words, there needs to be leadership. Well, of course, he got into office, and then they're like, well, we're going to test him. So in 1969, they tried this whole riot deal about some land, and they called it the bloody property and all this other kind of stuff. Well, they started to, you know, do all their violence and acting. There was a campus publication said there were, you know, people getting hurt. There were people with punctured lungs, and one had a shattered leg. 13 people had shotgun wounds. I mean, this is on a college university with these protesters, violence and everything like that. Well, Reagan, he just went in there and declared a state of national emergency there in California, called in the National Guard, 2,200 troops, sent them right in there to the university, had a curfew, and he banned any assemblies for 2 weeks. So if they even saw four people standing together, the army went in there and broke them up. So, I mean, it just wouldn't let them even get anything like that. So he had some press conferences with the university administrators and things. And let's see, one thing that they asked him, and he said, negotiate. What is it to negotiate? He said, what is to negotiate? All of it began the first time some of you who knew better and are old enough to know better let young people think they have the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest. And then he got up and walked out. That's more of the leadership that we need. Again, the vacillation and caving and, oh, just don't hurt them, let them have what they want and all this kind of stuff. And Ronald Reagan just went in there and just kind of put the law down, sit in the National Guard and says, we're done with this stuff. That's what we need. We need leadership, or we're going to be in a lawless situation. We talked about several things. Of course, we talked about three or four different scenarios, how they were violent toward these people that just because they disagreed with them. Terribly violent. The one woman we talked about where they grabbed her hair and yanked her from the back of the neck, and she had whiplash and had to go to physical therapy for 6 months. They're doing physical damage to people because someone disagreed with them academically or emotionally. We had this syllogism that we had, you know, to conclude that hate speech is the same thing as violent. Well, words can cause stress. Prolonged stress can cause physical harm. So stress can be a form of violence. Remember what we said last week, put anything else in the first premise there. Homework can cause stress. So prolonged homework can cause physical harm. So homework is a form of violence. A job can cause stress. Policies at work can cause stress. A lot of things can. Not knowing what comes out on the next episode of When Calls the Heart can cause stress. Sorry, Mallory, I had to throw that in there. Yeah, I'm just kidding. So, you know, that's a form of violence. We don't know. You know, everybody just, you can put anything you want in that syllogism, anything, a lot of things cause us stress. That doesn't mean it is a form of violence. Then we ended last week with this quote by Van Jones. I don't want you to be safe ideologically. I don't want you to be safe emotionally. And this is a liberal right here. This is one of the Obama era guys, a thoroughly liberal guy. I don't want you to be safe emotionally. I want you to be strong, and that's different. I'm not going to pave the jungle for you. Put on some boots and learn how to deal with adversity. People are going to disagree with you in life. People will disagree with you. I'm not going to take all the weights out of the gym. That's the whole point of the gym. This is the gym. Life is the gym, so to speak, here. There's going to be difficulty. There's going to be hardship. The Bible tells us to endure hardness. We're going to get to some verses here, hopefully at the end. Endure hardness. There's going to be difficulty. There's going to be hardships. How are we going to face them? By wanting someone else to just pave everything out for us? Again, I use these examples a lot because I've been teaching students. You know, they want everything. Well, what exactly do you want me to do on this paper? Well, let's see. We've given you a whole sheet of paper that outlined our expectations and what to do, and you just want everything handed to you. I don't know exactly. What do I do? You didn't give me a study guide for the test. Well, that's a big one. I don't have a study guide. What am I going to do? Study. You know, I tell the kids, especially like when they're getting up in 11th and 12th grade and things, I'll just give them a brief, hey, review this, and you'll be good. And they're like, oh, what am I going to do? Well, when you get into college, it's like, hey, y'all have an exam tomorrow. See ya. You know, I tell them, grad school is a little different. You got, 50 pages of single space type notes. All right, guys, your final exam's tomorrow. Have a good night. Yeah, been there many times and done that. It's the way it goes. You've got to memorize. You've got to learn. You've got to study. You've got to apply things. We don't want to pave the jungle for them. We're going to make it nice and clear for you. Here, you memorize these 10 words exactly. You know what I found also? I'm going to throw this out there. When I give study guides to students, more students fail the test. Isn't that shocking? I remember the first year I was teaching, and I was new to it. I don't know how Todd put up with me, but I appreciate it. He should have probably fired me. But I had this big science chapter, and it was a review of the history of science. And there was probably, I think, Zachary, you were in that class. He remembers this well. He remembers how upset I was. There was probably 30 or 35 scientists and what contributions they did to the fields of science. And so the test, it was the first test of the year. It was an easy, the curriculum had provided the test for me. It was literally a matching. Had a list of all the names, had a list of all these accomplishments. All you had to do was match them without drawing lines, right? Yeah, because that drives me nuts. Anyway, so I literally told the kids, I said, guys, I'm going to help you out. This is the first test. Here's all the men you need to know. There's 30 of them. And I told them word for word what the accomplishment was. Aristotle, the theory of spontaneous generation or whatever. And we reviewed it for 2 days. 2 days in class, over and over and over and over. Gave them study guides of exactly what to learn. Probably 70% of the class failed. Failed. Now, what's that? That's just lazy. They didn't study. I'll tell you, I was pretty upset. Maybe I shouldn't have been. But I learned something there. They had no ownership in that test. They had no ownership in it. And I found that if you just give them general ideas of what to study or general areas, then they realize, oh, we got to study. We got to work. Sometimes they think that just listening in class with the review, I don't have to study. I listened. I'm good. Well, some people can do that. There are some people that are gifted like that. But you take some ownership there. Go through some struggle. It's good for you. Learn to work hard. Learn to get out there and do something that's difficult. We've been working on these renovations and stuff, and Chris and I joke around, and we're just like, we're getting too old for this stuff, Chris. What's going on here? And, Roger and even had Pastor in there working. I'm telling you, when he pulls out the electronic power tools and all that stuff, we know we're in bad shape. I said, uh-oh, Pastor with a hammer, watch out, guys. So we've been having a lot of fun this week working, and we're getting older, but, it's good to work. It's good to get in there and go through some struggles. And, the Bible says, or I think it's the Bible says it, isn't it? Or is it not a proverb? I don't know. Bear the yoke in your youth. I think it's in the Bible, isn't it? Bear the yoke in your youth when you're young. Work. But the young people today want everything worked out for them. This, pay for my college. Pay for this. I should be able to stay with my parents until I'm 50. And just whatever. It's all yay, fun and games. No. Go through some adversity. Get out there and work hard. Go through some trials. It's going to happen. Just because we go through a trial doesn't mean the world ended. And sometimes in our generation of parents, we don't want to see our children going through those things. And sure, it's hard to watch your kid go through something difficult. But you know what? They'll come out a stronger person. And if they're a Christian, they'll come out closer to the Lord. And isn't that what we want? We want them to grow. And so let's not do this paving everything for them, paving the jungle. I wanted to next talk about the witch hunt. I know that sounds kind of weird, but it's a term used. Basically, you're just going to gang up on everybody. That's kind of, we go back to Salem witch trials and all that, and that was a crazy time when they just started grabbing women. Oh, you're a witch. Kill them, all those kind of things. Kind of a controversial topic. But in 1978, this man, Bergeson, He was a kind of wrote journal articles and things. He described a witch hunt, and I want you to look at these different points. It arises quickly, that's a problem. It's a quick thing. There's accusations of crimes against the collective, against everybody else. The charges are trivial or fabricated. And then sympathizers, now here's an important one. People that sympathize with those that are being accused have fear of defending the accused. I secretly really support you, but I can't say anything. These college professors and things that have been attacked, and we're going to look at an example here in a bit. Many professors secretly supported them and would tell them privately, but they wouldn't dare mention that in public or dare to be lumped in with that. They were fearful of defending the accused. It's based on really what's called a Durkheimian approach. It's a bunch of psychological things that man has two different levels. We're first individuals where we pursue our daily goals as individuals, but then we can also transition to another level temporarily in our psychological. This is all a bunch of psychological babble, really, but it says we can transition to a different level where it's a higher collective plane. So we can be individuals most of the time, but then every now and then there's a collective goal that we all need to go for. It's a different set of emotions that we experience when we're part of the collective. Now, I know that's psychological, but there's a lot of truth in that, because it's almost saying people get a rush out of ganging up on somebody else. Mob mentality. That's what it is. And you go, ooh, this is neat. We don't know why we're protesting, but we're out here protesting. You remember what happened with the Ephesians with Paul and the old coppersmith, you know, and he got out there. He's mad because Paul was taking his business away. It was all money. So he made up this big manipulated thing and said, oh, this man's here trying to destroy our religion. Next thing, got hundreds of thousands of people in the, great is Diana of the Ephesians, great is the Diana. I can imagine being in that crowd and just went, hey, who's Diana? I don't know. Great is Diana of the Ephesians. It's just a mob. We're throwing rocks. Why are we throwing? I don't know. It's kind of fun. Everybody else is doing it. We're getting a rush out of this. There's a collective goal. And it's this Durkheimian theory or whatever. I know it's just, it's psychological, but there's a lot of truth to that, because people gang up. And then they're fearful of, oh, that's the guy they're ganging up on. If I defend him, then I'm going to be thrown in there with him. I'm just kind of, yay. I'll kind of hide behind here and maybe throw a pebble or two while they're throwing boulders or something, you know. That's kind of the mentality. We get a rush out of being in this collective group, this mob mentality. That's really the basis for what they call this witch hunt theory. Here's this person that has offended somebody, and everybody's just all of a sudden uprising, oh, against that person. Hundreds of students are against that person. We're all going to go after him. And the other professors are like, oh, okay, have fun, buddy. I got you. I'll take you to breakfast tomorrow. See you, man. I'm out. You know, wish there was more I could do to help. See you. I'm out of here. You know, that's what happened to Todd and Chris and Roger one day. They're out working at the ballpark, sweating to death out there building a fence or something. Somebody drove up, and a ballpark person said, man, you guys do amazing work out here. I really appreciate it. Wish there was more I could do to help. Well, see you later. You know, it's like, thanks a lot, buddy. We'll just keep going out here. Just toss me a Gatorade when you have a chance. But that's that mob mentality. I don't want to be associated with that accused there, because it makes me look bad. And so I might get thrown in and someone might say something mean to me. And, you know, what happened to standing for something because of principle? Stand for something because of truth, that you believe in it despite the consequences. But I have fear of defending the accused. And a lot of these charges are trivial. Trivial stuff. Fabricated things. But, oh, remember intent versus impact? To me, I know you maybe not have meant it like that, but it really impacted me, because I can't wait to be a victim. I can't wait. It's so fun. I don't think there's anything fun about it. But this is this witch hunt theory. Let's look at an example here. Professor Tuval here. Let's talk about a few things with him. She was a professor that compared the positive reaction. Now, again, transracialism versus transgender. Now, this lady is a liberal. It's so funny when they even go after their own. Transracialism versus transgenderism. Let's remember a few things here. Remember Jenner, whatever, Caitlyn Jenner, whatever he, she, it, whatever is, and change genders or something. Everybody was all like, ooh, this is wonderful. Bruce, whatever it is, I don't know. Anyway, Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner, Bruce, whoever it is. And then there was another, remember the NCAA president or executive, I don't remember exactly what it was, Dolezal or something like that, that she said that she was white but identified as black. Y'all remember that a few years ago? That she was white but I identify as a black person. Well, if you're going to let people identify as a gender, and you can let people identify as a race, what's the problem? You know, so it's this transracialism. People are so afraid of offending somebody, they're going to change their race. I identify as Hispanic because I don't want to offend my poor Latino friends. Or I identify as a black person. Transracialism versus transgenderism. Well, she compared the positive, because you remember what happened with Caitlyn Jenner? Everybody was, oh, this is wonderful. This is great. It changed gender. This is awesome. But you remember the reaction when that lady did a transracialism? It wasn't very positive, was it? People were upset about that. And so she was comparing, she said, well, we were hostile, right? But they were hostile to transracialism, but they were open to transgenderism. That's all she was saying. She did a journal article where she was trying to figure out why was the public or society or the media at least, why were they open to transgenderism, but they were negatively viewing transracialism? Now she says there, I'm fully supportive of, she's a liberal, she's all gung-ho for trans, she made it clear. I support transgender, I support the homosexual movement, I support LGBTQ rights. She was very vocal about that, but she then was saying, why were we viewing that as positive and viewing transracialism as negative? She was like, they're kind of the same thing. If you choose to be whatever you want to be, then why can't it apply to races too? Well, all she did was just imply that. I'm going to read some of her word choices. Now, when she was in her article, now people got all mad, of course, because she was comparing the poor transgender oppressed people to the transracial. And that just wasn't a fair comparison. And so she really hurt their feelings, the transgender feelings. So critics were very vocal. They called her article transphobic. They called it violent. It was an expression of all that is wrong with white feminism. Now here's a woman that her whole career is vocal for homosexuality, but yet they turned on her in a quick heartbeat, didn't they? Somebody at University of Tennessee went to Facebook to expound the article's discursive transmisogynistic violence, that she enacted violence and perpetuates harm in numerous ways through her essay because she dead names a trans woman. She mentioned that Jenner's former male name, or his dead name, was Bruce. How dare you do that? Don't dead name Caitlyn. So offensive and harmful. She used words like transgenderism. She talked about biological sex. She even talked about anatomical anatomy of men versus women. Just her using the word choices of anatomy and biology was just horrible. So they weren't mad at her arguments. They were mad at her word choices. She harmed transgenders and women of color. They were not concerned with her arguments again, but only her word choices. So her trivial little things were taken as an attack on a vulnerable community. So they just were very upset about this. What happened is people began to pile on. Oh, they're going after Professor Tuval. Let's mob it up and witch hunt. Something so trivial. And the next thing you know, the whole world is against her and upset. One thing is a lot of the professors supported her. Let me read this real quick. She had a PhD advisor who wrote an essay defending her former student. And she lamented the cowardice of a lot of her colleagues. So like one woman stood up for her. In a private message, some people commiserated, expressed support, and apologized for what was happening to her. I mean, the whole university was against her. As one academic wrote to her in a private message, she says, "Sorry, I'm not saying this publicly. Parentheses, I have no interest in battling the mean girls on Facebook." That's what she said. "But for what it's worth, it's totally obvious to me that you haven't been committing acts of violence." So she supported her in a private message, but wouldn't dare come out in public. It's a classic characteristic of a witch hunt. So they apologize for what she must be going through, but in public, they fanned the flames and acted like they supported the movement that was going on, and a lot of it through social media. A few other things here. Let's talk about academic diversity for a few minutes here with this witch hunt. We're losing really political diversity where students are only exposed to a small segment of a political spectrum. Now think about what's happening. Since we don't want these people to come onto campus, since we don't want alternative views, we're only exposing students to this one little sliver of a political spectrum. And what students learn will be left-shifted. Left-shifted. And students will tend to the collective mentality of this left-shifted, and they will mobilize as a collective unit against anyone that may differ against that. So we're saying that the viewpoint diversity is necessary for the development of critical thinking. Isn't it good to be able to think through different and alternating opinions, different viewpoints? But since they're so afraid, it's focused on this little sliver of leftist thinking, and that's all the students are being exposed to. And it's a mob mentality. You're either with it, again, it's that us versus them. You're seeing the untruths in action here. Us versus them. Oh, we want to believe in this little sliver. And again, we've talked about this a lot before where the universities have done this. They're the ones that have promoted this type of thinking as well. Now, I wanted to give an example of Evergreen College. Evergreen College. There's a professor, Professor Weinstein. Again, these guys are total liberals. This is one of the most liberal universities in our nation. It's a small college near Seattle. Very liberal out there in Washington State, things of that nature. They're known for what the book calls quirky progressivism, just some weird stuff. They just support whatever leftist crazy idea you can think of. They're going for it. Their mission statement is this. Evergreen supports and benefits from local and global commitment to social justice, diversity, environmental stewardship, and service in the public interest. So they're totally in on all the liberal things you can imagine. Now, what had happened was, for many, many years, there has been what it called a day of absence, a day of absence. So the day of absence was inspired by a play and things like that, staff and faculty members of color. So staff and faculty teachers that were of color had been spending one day off of campus each year since the 1970s to show people that their absence had an effect. Okay, that's all they're saying. Where are the minority? Where are these colored professors and colored workers? So we want our absence to be felt. So every day, once in the school year since the 1970s, these colored professors and colored staff workers would stay home. Almost like, let's see if y'all can make it without us. We are important. We do matter. That's kind of their mindset. Okay, fine. I don't see anybody saying that they don't matter. But they wanted to make their point. Fine, no problem. Well, when Donald Trump got elected, oh, this is even worse. So they decided to make a change. Now, later, students were also involved in this in more recent times. So during the day of absence, if you were a colored professor, staff worker, or student, don't show up to campus. And let's just show those white supremacists that they need us. That's really the mindset. Well, when Trump got elected, they were all upset, of course. They wanted to make a change. Instead of the day being an opportunity for people of color, now, it was voluntary. If you wanted to stay home, you can. To voluntarily absent themselves, when Trump got elected, they said white students and faculty should stay away from campus. They reversed it. So us colored people, we're going to run things, and you bunch of white haters, supremacists, y'all have to stay home. Like mandatory have to stay home. That's what they changed it to. Well, this professor thought that this was a little bit wrong. He was like, "What is this?" So he wrote, "There is a huge difference between a group deciding to voluntarily absent themselves from a shared space in order to highlight their vital and underappreciated roles." The guy's like, "Oh yeah, highlight their underappreciated roles, no problem." But he said, "That's totally different than telling other people to go away. That in and of itself is racist." It is. Telling the white people, "You can't come on campus." But yet the white people were the racists. Okay, I'll try to figure that out. He said, "One's right to speak or to be here must never be based on skin color," right? That's what they've been saying for 30 years. But suddenly, we're making it based, you don't have a right to be here and you don't have a right to speak because you're white. That's racism in a nutshell. That's what it is. Well, he sent that out and he said, "You guys, you shouldn't He was a kind of, you know, he's a liberal. He's like, guys, we should be collective. We should be inclusive. Why are you disincluding people? This doesn't make any sense. If they want to come, they should be allowed to come. Oh, buddy, they were very angry about that. He also feared that white students and faculty that did not support this and chose to come to campus would be viewed negatively, and maybe they would be hated against and things. And he had expressed some concerns and other things like that. Well, a month later, took a whole month before one little thing set them off, so they decided to take it out on Weinstein. So they went to his classroom and berated him. A whole group of angry students marched to his door, cornered him in the hallway, yelled at him, berated, called him terrible swear words, terrible names they called him in front of everybody. They demanded that he would resign. It was a huge uproar in the campus. Demanding him, they said, you're a racist, you're harmful. And he said, you need to apologize. Well, he didn't. He said, I'm not going to apologize. He said, I'm not a racist. Why would I apologize? Oh, they got even more angry at him. He tried to engage them, and he said, hey, let's talk about it. If you guys want to understand my viewpoint, let's discuss it. And they told him, we don't care what terms you want to speak on. We are not speaking on terms of white privilege. That's what they told him. Well, they just continued going after him. They called the police in. Protester prevented, physically stopped the police from reading. Now, how in the world a protester can physically stop a police officer from getting in there? What kind of cops are these? Exactly. Unbelievable. They're in California. They're afraid to do anything. Or Seattle, wherever this is. Police officer, you put your hands on me to stop me. You're under arrest. Get the handcuffs out and throw him into the wagon and take him off to prison. That's what they should have done. But again, no leadership. Campus police called other police departments for backup. They were scared to death, basically. The protesters, though, said they were fearful for their lives. Now, who are the ones causing the violence? Did Weinstein cause the violence? Did he punch anybody? No. Did the police officers even get in there? No. Who was being violent? They were. But they were fearful for their lives. Why? Because someone disagreed with me. Someone has a different opinion than I do. So they marched to the administration building next, because they're fearful for their lives. They found and confronted the president out of his office. I mean, they, horrible obscenities. It's on video. Screaming at him, basically cussing him out. President agreed, hey, we'll meet with you guys. We'll try to work something out. If there's errant faculty in the sciences, they're going to say some things we don't like, and our job is to bring them all in or get them out. And what I hear us stating that we are working toward is bring them in, train them, and if they don't get it, sanction them. That is the president of a college in the United States of America proposing to fire or punish professors who don't agree or accept the teachings of something, and that is a First Amendment violation. It's happening in America. Basically, we're going to tell a professor what he can and can't say, or he's gone. What happened to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights? What happened to the freedom of speech and all those things? That's the president of a college in America agreeing with these. Well, they then went to the campus police chief's office. Stacey Brown was the police chief. They demanded that she come unarmed. Well, she said, I'm not disarming in uniform, so she changed into civilian clothes and she came. They were just cursing, doing terrible things. They assigned protesters to follow her all day long to berate her. The protesters were controlling all the exits to the buildings. You couldn't go in or out. They had mace. They planned to prevent Weinstein from leaving the building. They texted him and said, hey, don't leave. You might get maced. He called his wife and said, hey, I'm told I'm not allowed to leave the building. I don't know what to do. They had terrible things. Students of color who spoke supportively of Weinsteiner, who even asked to hear from people not in the protesters' camp, were shouted down and called race traitors. What do we say about the witch hunt? If you don't support the group, you're condemned. Even colored students were trying to defend Weinstein, and they called them race traitors. Craziness. White students that were there, this is funny, they had some white people also joining the protesters. Hey, we're going to help you guys out. They told the white protesters, you guys stand in the back and don't say a word. They weren't allowed to speak. They were just allowed to stand in the back. So, I mean, this is really inclusive, isn't it? Doing all this in the name of diversity and inclusion while we don't include people and are being very selective. Well, they searched cars the next day. I mean, they were doing all kinds of things. They were yelling, making fun of the president, all kinds of things. They looked for, they were looking for Weinstein all over for the cars. They were looking at everything. They interrupted a faculty meeting. They demanded bias training for the faculty and permission for protesters to not turn homework in on time. So we've been out here protesting, and so we have our demands. First demand is we need mandatory bias training for the faculty. Second demand, by the way, we've been protesting for 3 days. Can we turn our homework in late? Buddy, they should have booted every one of them out. If not into prison, booted every one of them out. But we're fearful because we've got to be inclusive and we can't hurt people's feelings. They captured the administrators and literally locked them in the president's office. Said, don't you think it's continuing white supremacy when the leadership is only white people? That's what they asked. You know what the administrators did? Nodded their heads and said, yes. That because most of the administrators were white people, the university is a white supremacist. Hey, ho, 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 these racist faculty have got to go. That's what they were chanting. These people are crazy. That night in an email to the campus community, you'll like this, an Evergreen Media Studies professor wrote approvingly that the protesting students were doing exactly what we've taught them. He was proud of them. Boy, they passed their final exam. They did what we taught them to do. Isn't that insane? Hurting people. And they've done exactly what we've taught them to do. Well, I'll finish with this. Our time's almost gone. They barricaded them in the offices. They resulted in lawsuits, resignations. Professor Weinstein actually went on Fox News. What do you think that did? Oh, he went on that white supremacist media. They went nuts. They roamed the campus with baseball bats and tasers looking for white supremacists, vandalizing buildings, assaulting students. Isn't that ridiculous? Because someone disagreed with racism. Think about that. A professor disagreed with racism, said racism is wrong. You're excluding these white people from campus. That's wrong. And they got mad about it. So, him being on Fox News, they said it endangered the students, and they filed lawsuits, and they had to do a settlement and all these kind of things. The president, here's the president, okay? He agreed to many of the protesters' demands and announced that he was grateful for the passion and courage the protesters displayed. Brainwashing. And they just. We've catered to this for so long. We've catered to doing what you want to do. And we didn't make it very far. I apologize for that. I really wanted to get to the next two slides I've got a lot of Bible verses we're going to go over. I guess we'll get there next week or next time we meet, whatever. But we're going to wind this down with, I've got some Bible verses we're going to look at. And then I've got also some suggestions of why this has happened. And one of the big ones is social media. We're going to spend a time or two on social media as well. Father, thank you for the time this morning. We are sorry for the things we're seeing in our country. Lord, I pray that you would help us to be strong, that we would be faithful to your word no matter what. We would teach our children, our young people, the importance of the truth of God's word. Lord, help us to be faithful in these things and to continue in prayer for our nation. Pray these things in Christ's name. Amen. Thank you.